The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Shadate Hargett Hill from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. This edition will be featuring articles for both April and May. Before we get started with on articles, let's take a moment to talk about Miss Oprah and her contributing to the graduating class of 2020. This article comes from the NewYorkTimes.com website. Oprah to Class 2020. What will your essential service be? With the usual pomp and circumstance put on hold, Miss Winfrey and scores of celebrities feted graduates with a virtual celebration on Facebook. Hugging friends, nope. Class photos, afraid not. Instead, in place of the usual pomp and circumstance, Oprah Winfrey on Friday asked America's graduates to the pandemic class, she called them, to consider what their essential service in this world would be. The online commencement ceremony hosted by Facebook and featuring scores of celebrities was one of several this week that would replace stage walks and cap tossings for the nation's nearly 3.7 million high school seniors and some 3 million college graduates. With a critical phase of their lives upended by the pandemic, the class of 2020 will receive their diplomas in the mail or in their phones. Recognizing the need to offer extra inspiration, big names have made even more appearances than usual as commencement speakers this year via webcams instead of on stage, including the actor and coronavirus survivor Tom Hanks. He told graduates at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, that their lives would be marked by the pandemic in the same way that previous generations experienced wars. The new normal will continue on Saturday when former President Barack Obama will give two commencement addresses, the first at 2 p.m. for graduates of historically black colleges and universities and another in prime time for high school graduates, airing all the major television networks. On Friday, Ms. Winfrey challenged graduates to not just rebuild society after the pandemic, but to create a more just world as the nation recovers. And as many graduates look warily at the grim job market, she highlighted the service of essential workers and asked graduates to contemplate how they would use their own passions to benefit those around them. She also made an apparent reference to the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, a 25-year-old black man in Georgia whose death in February led to murder charges last week. For every person burdened by bias and bigotry, for every black man and woman living in their American skin, fearful to even go for a jog, inequality is a pre-existing condition, Ms. Winfrey said. Next month, Ms. Winfrey will also headline a graduation ceremony for high school seniors in Chicago, where she filmed her top-rated talk show of more than two decades. Here are Ms. Winfrey's remarks from the Facebook event. She says, "Hello, everyone. I know you may not feel like it, but you are indeed the chosen class for such a time as this, the class of 2020. You're also a united class, the pandemic class, that has the entire world striving to graduate with you. Of course, this is not the graduation ceremony you envisioned. You've been dreaming about that walk across the stage, your family and friends cheering you, whoop, whoop, the caps flung joyously in the air. But even though there may not be a pomp because of our circumstances, never has a graduating class been called the step into the future with more purpose, vision, passion, and energy and hope. Your graduation ceremony is taking place with so many luminaries celebrating you on the world's Facebook stage. I'm just honored to know them and join them and salute you. You know the word graduate, comes from the Latin gradius, meaning a step towards something. And in the early 15th century, graduation was a term used in alchemy to mean a temper or a refining. Every one of us is now being called to graduate, to step towards something. Even though we don't know what, every one of us is likewise now being called to temper the parts of ourselves that must fall away to refine who we are, how we define success, and what is generally meaningful. And you, the real graduates of this day, you will lead us. I wish I could tell you I don't know the path forward. I don't. There is so much uncertainty. In truth, there always has been. What I do know is that the same guts and imagination that got you to this moment, all those things are the very things that are going to sustain you through whatever is coming. It's vital that you learn with the discomfort of stepping into the unknown. It's really okay to not have all the answers. The answers will come for sure. If you can accept not knowing long enough to get still and stay still long enough for new thoughts to take root in your more quiet, deeper, truer self. The noise of the world drowns out the sound of you. You have to get still to listen. So can you use this disorder that COVID-19 has wrought? Can you treat it as an uninvited guest that's come into our midst to reorder our way of being? Can you, the class of 2020, show us not how to put the pieces back together again, but how to create a new and more evolved normal, a world more just, kind, beautiful, tender, luminous, creative, whole? We need you to do this because the pandemic has illuminated the vast systematic inequalities that have defined life for too many for too long. For poor communities without adequate access to health care, inequality is a pre-existing condition. For immigrant communities forced to hide in the shadows, inequality is a pre-existing condition. For incarcerated people with no ability to social distance, inequality is a pre-existing condition. For every person burdened by bias and bigotry, for every black man and woman living in their American skin, fearful to even go for a jog, inequality is a pre-existing condition. You have the power to stand for, to fight for, and vote for healthier conditions that will create a healthier society. This moment is your invitation to use your education to begin to heal our afflictions by applying the best of what you've learned in your head and felt in your heart. This moment has shown us that Dr. King tried to tell us decades ago, he understood that we are caught in an inescapable network of mutality, tied with a single garment and of destiny. That's what he said. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. If humanity is a global body, every soul is a cell in that body, and we are being challenged like never before to keep the global body healthy by keeping ourselves healthy in mind and body and spirit. As all the traditions affirm, the deepest self-care is at once caring for the human family. And we see this so clearly with essential workers. Look who turns out to be essential. Teachers, your teachers, healthcare workers, of course, the people stocking grocery stores and shelves, for cashiers, the truck drivers, food providers, those who are caring for your grandparents, those who clean the places where we work and shop and carry out our daily lives. We are all here because they all, at great and profound risk, are still providing their essential service. What will your essential service be? What really matters to you? The fact that you're alive means you've been given a reprieve to think deeply about that question. How will you use what matters in service to yourself, your community, and the world? For me, it's always been talking and sharing stories. For you, well, that's for you to discover. And my hope is that you will harness your education, your creativity, your value, valor, your voice, your vote, reflecting on all that you've witnessed and hungered for, all that you know to be true, and use it to create more equality, more justice, and more joy in the world, to be the class that commenced a new way forward, the class of 2020. Bravo, brava, brava, brava. And that was what Ms. Winfrey said to the commencement class, the graduating class of 2020. And now I'll move on to what is on the cover of the April magazine as well as May's magazine. On the cover of April magazine, it has Oprah sitting in a chair with three of her doggies. One of her dogs is the beige dog, and he's sitting in the chair, and she's feeding him some type of cookies. The other two, which are black and white, one is trying to jump on the table, and the other one is sitting right beside her. She's smiling into the camera. She has a gray outfit on with a blue button-down shirt and some white sneakers. She has a beautiful big ring on her left finger, and she has her hair straight and long and pretty. She looks like she's outside her yard, a beautiful green grass, and a big looks like palm tree. And some of the issues in this magazine are, of course, what I know for sure. People who live the fullest lives know how to let love in. Goodbye, FOMO, hello, YOMO, the surprising joy of missing out. I scream, you scream, we all scream for eye cream. And the New Girls Network, genius ways women can help each other get ahead. So we'll be checking out some of those in the upcoming week. Weeks. In the other edition of the May edition, she's on the cover, and it's beautifully put here. She has kind of like a mauve dress on, and it goes down to her ankles, and she is barefoot on the grass, and she has a red polish on. Her hair has some waves in it, and it looks like it's blowing back. She has some earrings on. She has a cup of tea, and it says the ultimate O-list, your chance to win it all. It's our 20th anniversary, 20 years of you and me. And so she's going to be talking about that, the 20 years of doing O Magazine. And so we're going to take a look at all of these different things in both of these magazines in the next few weeks. And since I'm tackling two months issues in one, I'll be going back and forth, but I'm going to start with things that are in both magazines. And the first one is in the April's The Question. It says, not counting your mom, what woman has helped you most? Amy Jensen from Troy, New York says, my little sister, we had a hard go of it as teens, and I wish I had been a better big sister to her. Now she's an amazing, inspiring woman and a source of strength for me. Jenny Dennis from Winter Springs, Florida says, my sixth grade teacher, Miss Fouch, she provided leadership opportunities in the classroom that boosted my confidence and propelled me toward long-term success. She had such a way of challenging our young minds and encouraging us to think for ourselves. She is a one-of-a-kind educator. My soon-to-be mother-in-law, the way she raised her son has contributed to my life in so many ways that I could never pay back. I'm thankful for the mamas who raise boys into men who go on to make loving husbands. That came from Natasha Kwawi from Los Angeles. Catherine Wilson from Newark, New Jersey says, Kathy Slater, who is my boss for 6 years and died shortly after she retired. She was my mentor and my friend, and she showed me unconditional love. When she passed, she left me a trust fund to help pay off my student loans. Jessica Donahue from Eugene, Oregon. My best friend, Amy, I call her my pillow rock. She's a soft shoulder I cry on, but she's also there with a swift kick in the rear when I need it. Selena Tarscott from Newburgh, Oregon. My friend's mom, Robin, took me under her wing when I had my daughter at 18. My own mom was too far away to be able to help. Robin took me into her home and got me through the pregnancy and the tough months after. I'm forever grateful for the love and support she gave me. Heather Ford from Yucca Valley, California. My wife, every day, she helps me believe in myself and reflects my own strength back to me. So, not counting your mom, what woman has helped you most? And that's a question that maybe we all could ask. And some of us may no longer have our mothers. So who would that person be for you? I have a lot of people in my life that would qualify as that, as powerful women. One of which is my high school teacher, Miss Baldwin. She always told me that I could do anything that I put my mind to, regardless of my disability. And she told me that one day she hoped to see me in Washington or see me doing a show somewhere around the world. Well, Miss Baldwin, I'm here at NCRS and I'm on the air. So things do happen and dreams do come true. And in May's edition of the question, it asks, what is your favorite memory from the past 20 years? Carla Ann Ilusha from New York City says, bringing my son home from Guatemala. Adoption was a long process, but so worth it. Cindy Head from Chester, South Carolina says, participating in Bob Green's 20 Years Younger Challenge for the Oprah Show. I made so many new friends and most of us stay in touch through a private Facebook group. Sydney Beer, Salt Lake City. When my 5-year-old tried to pull his own teeth because he needed the money. Mary Hurst from Newburgh, Indiana, sitting among a family of mountain gorillas in Rwanda in 2002. Nasbruga Irene from Kapala, Uganda. My first time on a plane, I went to Nairobi. Amanda Cole from Kent, Ohio, eating my first real meal after I finished hiking the Pacific Crest Trail in my 20s. The most delicious pizza from a mountain town bar. Jennifer Zorzola, seeing the Duomo, the cathedral in Milan, at midnight in the pouring rain with no other tourists around. So I ask you that question as well. What is your favorite memory from the past 20 years? That's an interesting one for me. I can't say that I've had a lot of memorable moments that have been good. I will say that one memorable moment was a few years ago going to Canada with my mother. We had such an awesome time, and we always said that we were going to take more trips together. And my goal was to be this next 20 years traveling around the world. So we'll see what happens. So maybe you can ask me that question 20 more years from now. And some of the articles that we're going to read are going to come from Oprah's Here We Go. And so this week's Here We Go from April, we're going to be talking about these stories this month. We've come a long way, baby, yet here it is, 2020, and women still don't earn as much money as men. We're not promoted at the same rate as, and the Equal Rights Amendment has yet to be enshrined in our Constitution. But as you'll see in Sister Acts, that's not stopping women from helping one another get ahead. And the progress we are making is genuinely thrilling. Speaking of thrilling, when was the last time a cookie actually thrilled you? We're going to check out a chocolate chip number. Those roasted hazelnuts are a total game changer. We also have in e-consciousness, O-list, and also an important look at how we deal with chronic pain. And the eye creams that combat everything from lines to puffy pouches. I need that. Finally, I'd like to take this opportunity to announce my retirement. It's been a good one. It's been a good run, but it's time to concentrate on family. Stedman and I married in a quiet ceremony about a year ago, and we decided to devote ourselves to the three little ones pictured in this photograph, which are her three little doggies. And she says, oh, and by the way, April's Fools. Now, that was last month. So, of course, anybody who's listened to me tell you this right now would have been completely shocked, as I was reading it, until I saw the April Fools. So it is May. And it's not April, but that's a good one, Oprah. Very good one. This article I'm reading now is called Sister Acts. Remember the old boys club schmoozing on the golf course, doing deals over scotch and steak. Ladies need not apply. Well, it's still in business and in some ways more exclusive than ever. 60% of male managers in the U.S. now say they're uncomfortable mentoring, working alone, or socializing with a female colleague, a 32% increase since the rise of the hashtag MeToo movement. Thanks, guys. But here's the workaround. Sisters are doing it for themselves. On the next brief pages, we'll talk to and meet trailblazers, rule breakers, and progress makers finding potent new ways to help other women get ahead. We're calling it the New Girls Network. Starting with the social climber, Shelma Joan, rock climber, founder of Flash Foxy Crew and the Women's Climbing Festival. The identity crisis. Growing up in Southern California, Shelma June says, I've surfed, I skateboarded, I mountain biked, I was co-captain of my high school's first women's water polo team. In short, says June, I was self-proclaimed tomboy, which is a really problematic term. Why do we need the word boy to describe being outdoorsy? More problematic was the way June came to view other women. In those male-dominated sports, there can be a toxic energy where there's room for only one cool girl and other women are competition. She says, I had complicated relationships with women for a long time. Having earned a master's in urban planning, June got a job as a community planner and relocated to New York City. There, while honing her newest skill, rock climbing, she met some women at her climbing gym who practiced in an area 2 hours north of the city. That's where I got to understand what it feels like when you're trying something hard with just women, says June. When the pressure to act a certain way is removed because no men are around, you suddenly discover all the kinds of ways to challenge and inspire one another. In 2014, as a casual way to celebrate the climbing we are doing, June started an Instagram account at Hey Flash Foxy in rock climbing speak, and flash is the feat of scaling something without falling in the first time you try. And Foxy says June means doing it with your own swagger. With female climbers all over the country searching for others like them, Flash Foxy quickly gained hundreds, then thousands, then tens of thousands of followers, and an online women's climbing community was born. A lot of women felt like they were the only female climbers, not because there were so few of us, but because we were far apart. And the media mostly showcased men, says June. Social media allowed us to discover that actually there are a lot of us and we're stoked to be together. In 2016, June put her community organizing background to work to create the Women's Climbing Festival. I had this vision of 30 or 40 women in the desert, she says. We announced it online and 300 women said they wanted to come. Eight festivals later, every single one of the twice yearly gatherings has sold out, some in just 1 minute. Hanging from a rope over a 1,000 foot drop may be frightening, June says, but being a mentor to somebody is really scary. You got some mad imposter syndrome, like, am I qualified or experienced enough to be imparting wisdom? That's the thing. We're figuring it out because having women lead is vital. And this one article came from Elena Engage. The next one is the brew mistress, Francis Antonio Martino, founder of Female Brew Fest. What people expect, white, bearded, flannel shirts. That's the stereotype of a craft brewer, says Francis Antonio Martina, a godmother of South Florida's craft brew scene. She says, in fact, she loves beer so much, she and her husband hosted their wedding reception at a local bar, made centerpieces from empty bottles they had served for the occasion, and gave custom pint glasses as favors. The beer lover's dilemma. How do you get past feeling like an outsider? I'm not your average beer geek, and before I learned about craft beer, I used to be a bit intimidated when I walked into a bar, a brewery, or a bottle shop, says Antonia Martina, a visual merchandise consultant who is Filipina female and a full 5 feet 1 inch tall, but has been known to rock a flannel shirt. The solution? Invite more women to the craft beer party. By throwing a party for women to drink craft beer, having already founded the Femme Collective, a local network of women entrepreneurs, Antonio Martina started the Femme Al Festival, get it? Female Brew Festival for Fort Lauderdale in 2017 to combine two passions, female empowerment and craft beer. In 4 years, the festival has grown from a 15 brewery to 700 person gathering to a celebration with more than 30 breweries and 1500 attendees. Not to mention women fronted bands, female DJs and speakers, beer and yoga experiences, and the beer equivalent of wine tasting. Most important, says Antonio Martina, all the breweries are female owned or have women brewers. No small feat since, according to a 2019 Breweries Association survey, 96% of breweries owned by one gender are in the hands of men. Reasons to say cheers. You don't need to be in Fort Lauderdale to raise a stein alongside other craft beer loving ladies. Across the country, members of the Pink Boot Society, an organization for female beer industry professionals that offer scholarships and seminars, meet to share a job listing and discuss all things beer. Fun fact, Barley beer was first brewed in ancient Mesopotamia, mostly by women. Naturally, Antonio Martinez heads for local chapters of the Pink Boots Society and of Girls Pint Out, which has hosted more events and gets together nationwide for women to learn about craft brews, craft brews free of misplanning beer bros. The next one is the Erector Set. Sherry LaJarni and Taya Cook, developers of Raina Condominiums. Poetic justice, it sounds like a sort of a feminist fable. Two female real estate developers walk onto the site of a notorious former strip club in Toronto and assemble an all-woman team of architects, engineers, planners, construction managers, and lawyers to build a 9-story, 200-unit condo named Reina, the Spanish word for queen, and that's distinctively on hallowed ground. The club was associated with violence and all sorts of unsavory activities, says Taya Cook, co-founder of Reina. People in the neighborhood are excited to have something in its place that's empowering women and bringing good energy. The backstory: less than 2 years ago, Cook opened an issue of Toronto Life magazine to read Condo Kings, an article highlighting the mag's picks for the top real estate execs. 20 men and not a single woman. I came into the office that morning and said, we have to do something about this industry. The sad stats: while about 67% of certified realtors are women, the more lucrative arena of commercial real estate tends to be testosterone fueled. Women make up roughly 35% of the workforce and hold 11% of the C-suite positions. After 15 years in the industry, I've become accustomed to being the only woman in the meeting, says Cook. Haters gonna hate. The project had naysayers at the first. One person dared to send my assistant a photo of a collapsed bridge, that has supposedly been designed by a woman, which wasn't true, recalls Sherry LaJarni, co-founder of Rainer. Now the real estate queens are having the last laugh. People asked, how are you going to find women civil engineers, says LaJarni. Funny enough, we found qualified women from engineers to architects for every role. Housekeepers, Matriarch Political Action Committee. The mission: to support politically progressive working class women running for Congress. There's an appetite for new leadership, says Namiki Kunst, board director of the Political Action Committee Matriarch, which she helped establish last year. But statistically, it takes women 3 times to run before they win. We're here to help them succeed, whether it's sooner or later, because every campaign is a chance to shift the conversation. The barrier to entry: cash money. Running a congressional campaign is expensive. More than half the lawmakers in Congress are millionaires. On top of that, fewer than 24% of them are women, and fewer than 9% are women of color. Further proof that men have so far made the rules. It was only in 2018 that the Federal Election Commission approved candidates using campaign money for child care during an election, and only after a mother of two running for Congress on Long Island petitioned for it. The method: Matriarch comes through nominations to select candidates to support. Once a woman is officially endorsed, she receives funding and access to what Conks calls a 40-plus person brain trust, a mix of women who have won and lost elections, union leaders, activists, organizers, and media experts, along with twice monthly conference calls to discuss the ins and outs of specific challenges such as FEC filing or creating a campaign budget. The women can ask for support on any situation that comes up, from seeking a field manager to requesting funding for an election lawyer when a deep-pocketed opponent tries to push her off the ballot on a technicality. Hashtag there with her. With a rolling schedule of elections across the country, Matriarch will have endorsed 10 candidates by the end of April. They include Samalise Lopez, a Puerto Rican community organizer who grew up in family shelters in the South Bronx and is running in New York on a platform focused on affordable housing. Morgan Harper, a former foster child who became a labor lawyer in Ohio, dedicated to ending economic segregation, and Nabila Islam, a Georgia activist who was inspired to fight her reform after watching her mother, an immigrant from Bangladesh, sue the insurance company that denied her care after she'd injured herself working in a warehouse. The impact for a candidate simply receiving Matriarch's endorsement is a victory, as Islam, the activist running for office in Georgia, says the support system in place for wealthier or more centrist candidates aren't there for working class progressive ones. The existence of Matriarch means we're finally being seen. When you come from a background like mine, where you're never seen or heard, it means so much. The Tectonic. Anna Katrina Shadlitsky, founder of Women in STEAM Mentorship Program. The numbers game. 68 men and one other woman. Those were the co-workers Anna Katrina Shitskles found when she was hired to work in Apple's iPod group right out of college. And she thought that was pretty cool. At first, I was proud that I was one of the only two women on the team, she says. I thought that reflected well on me. The aha moment at a women's executive leadership program. She says, I had an epiphany. It's not like there are only two spaces for women and I won one. Why aren't there more? And what can I do about it? The leaky pipe. She said she did not want engineers. She did want engineers are trained to do, study and try to fix the problem. After some research, she realized that while more women earn master's degrees and PhDs than men in certain STEM fields, the transition from school to employment is, she says, a leaky pipe, a spot where qualified women fall out of the pipeline. That happens for a variety of reasons, ranging from the fact that women are less likely to apply for jobs. From the fact that women are less likely to apply for jobs they're not 100% qualified for, to the reality that in such a male-dominated field, women tend to have less access to a network that can get their resume to the top of the pile, says Sandesky. To patch the leak, she partnered with Stanford, her alma mater, and founded what eventually became the Women in STEM Mentorship Program. That first year, a team of female engineers mentored 15 STEM students, helping them build a network of contacts, reaching out to women in the field and seeking out and applying for the jobs. Flash forward, today she runs her own firm, Instrumental, which spots problems in companies, development and production, enabling them to improve their manufacturing process. Outside of the office, she continues to run the Women in STEM membership program, which now serves 70 to 100 university students each year, some from as far as Abu Dhabi. Most of the mentoring is done remotely through one-on-one conversations and at an annual summit in the Bay Arena. She says, we offer tactical advice. It's like, here's how to do stuff that feels weird and awkward, like emailing someone at a company where you might want to work to ask questions, or once you're offered a job, negotiating your salary. Each one teach one. For her, she says feeling qualified enough to start the program was a revelation. It wasn't a manager. Nobody reported to me, and I felt like I had no proven record, she recalls. But I realized I had more power than a student, and I could reach my hand down and pull the next woman up and help her through the process. Wherever you are, you're always ahead of someone else. You can pull them up with you. Here's proof. 7 years into the mentoring program, she says, we've been around long enough that some of our earlier students have come back to the mentor themselves. The action hero, Christina Hodgson, screenwriter, co-founder of Lucky Exports Pitch Program. The game-changing move. After working as a development executive in London and New York, Christina Hodgson transitioned to writing screenplays. But as she quickly learned, it's very hard as a woman starting out in this industry not to get pigeonholed as a female writer rather than just a writer. I was continually sent YA fantasies, small erotic thrillers, or jobs about a girl who's a half-wit or finds out she's a princess of dysphoria. And I kept saying, I want to write Terminator 2. I want to work on big action popcorn movies. So she wrote her own script, an ambitious sci-fi action movie about genetically augmented humans planning to take over the world on spec. It sold in a bidding war in 2014, and although it has yet to be produced, it put her on the map as an action writer. The Sci-Fi Sisterhood. After that success, Hodgson was hired to work in the writer's room of the Transformers, a team of 12, including two other women. Many saw us as diversity hires and underlings. And we took care of each other. We amplified each other's work and voices, she recalls. In late 2017, Hodgson looked up at the stats on women screenwriters in the 2016 Hollywood Writers Report and found them staggeringly had as in 1,600 working female writers. Women are outnumbered there 2-1. It's such an achievable goal to address that, she realized. Even increasing that by a small number will move the needle. Group therapy. With that in mind, Hodgson decided to start a writer's room of her own, one in which participants will retain control of their work they created, which doesn't happen in most studio-run writers' programs. She approached actor Margot Robbie, a close friend since they began working together on this year's Birds of Prey. The wildly brilliant things that come out of Christina's brain never cease to amaze me, but this is one of her greatest ideas yet, says Robbie, who was immediately on board because we have a responsibility to not simply talk about hiring more women, but put that into motion and create opportunities. The result is the Lucky Export Pitch Program. Enter the child of Robbie's Lucky Chap Entertainment Company and Hodgson's own Hodgson Exports, which had its inaugural run at the end of 2018. Writing for the future. For the program, the founders and their teams selected 6 female screenwriters whose original ideas for action-centric movies and an area in which women screenwriters are particularly unrepresented to meet with the staff of Lucky Chap and Hazen Exports in a writer's room for a minimum of 3 days a week over 4 weeks. The idea is that they come in with a notion or a one-liner and leave with a fully outlined movie and a pitch we can take out into the world, says Hodson. We would love it if all 6 movies come out and they are fantastic, but we also just want to introduce these writers into the studio system and they get their and so that they can get hired again for other work. When they do, these women can write the change they want to see in the world. So other on screen, the doctrine, engineer or scientist, anyone in a lab coat doing something important is 6 feet tall, straight white male, says Hassan. But make this clear. Make them all women. Make them all women of color. If the writer just shifts the gender of the character who is in the background doing something clever, then we can start to shift the norm. The Food Network. Joanna James, producer, writer, and director of Fine Line. A Woman's Place, traditionally, we've been expected to know our way around a kitchen, unless that kitchen is in a restaurant, in which case we have to step aside and yield the Viking range to a tattooed badass wielding a pepper mill. Less than 7% of head chefs and restaurant owners are women, says filmmaker and journalist Joanna James. But most of these world-renowned chefs credit their mothers or grandmothers with inspiring them to cook. Turning Up the Heat, James' documentary, A Fine Line, which aired on PBS in March, explores issues women face in the culinary world: sexism, harassment, few mentoring opportunities, lack of capital, and punishing schedules, problems James was familiar with because her mother, Val, is a proprietor of the beloved Val's Restaurant and Lounge in Holden, Massachusetts. A Fine Line venture features Val alongside a number of heavy hitters, including Lydia Bestashinich, co-owner of 4 restaurants, including Del Pasto, Kate Cora, and Dominique Cran. All share their experiences ranging from handsy managers cornering them in the walk-in freezer to rejecting letters that read, "We don't hire women in our kitchen," to what others call the torment of leaving behind a child for long stretches. More than half of culinary school graduates are female, but when it comes to leadership roles, those numbers tank, says James. Just Desserts. Along with the film, James created the MAPP Impact Campaign to increase the ranks of women in leadership positions in the field. Fair warning, MAPP stands for a mouthful. It's Mentorship and Apprenticeship, Affordable and Accessible Child Care, Paid Family Leave, Advocacy, and Power to Live Your Truth and Give Back. Whew. She's also hosting screenings and panel discussions around the country when women in the industry can apply for mentorships with their culinary sheroes and receive funding for child care and travel expenses so they can attend the training sessions. Mama Knows Best. In a voice made generally and gravely from years of shouting orders for a swordfish and spakamita, Val, who was inducted into the prestigious culinary organization Los Amos of Discopa, I said that wrong, the Organization of Las Almas de Escobar Society of New York in 2017, I got that wrong still, recalls her own struggles. Traditional parents who thought running their family restaurant was a job better suited to her brother, working full time as a single mom of two kids, being a self-proclaimed little girl Greek desperate to get a bank loan. It makes me teary just thinking about it, she admits. Now it's so nice to have these young women coming in and saying, I can do this. And I'm like, really? Let's go. The Monkey Honeys. Vicky Saunders, founder of CEO. Tackling the to-do list, polluted oceans, world hunger, a healthcare crisis. We are at a moment when we should be rethinking almost everything, says entrepreneur Vicky Saunders. We need the full spectrum of humanity to bring their innovations forward to solve the problems they see. Unfortunately, that hasn't been happening, as the people who write the checks that turn ideas into realities are overwhelmingly male. Only about 3% of venture capitalist funding in the U.S. goes to female entrepreneurs. In the U.K., it's a pitiful 1%. In order to give more women chances to save the world, in 2015, Saunders launched CEO, an incubator for female entrepreneurs who are starting businesses aligned with what Saunders calls the world's to-do list. The United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, from spreading knowledge to fostering good health to helping clean up our polluted environment. It is a smart investment. CEO is funded by a network of approximately 500 female investors called activators per country in the U.S., Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the UK, who practice what Saunders calls radical generosity. Each year, every activator donates $1,100 they never expect to get back, but that will continue to grow and nurture necessary new ventures. The first $100 goes to the CEO's operating cost. The rest is pooled and loaned at 0% interest to the five women-led companies in such country, selected annually by the donors. Loans are paid back over 5 years and then returned to the pool to fund a new group. The activators range in age 14 to 95, and each one, regardless of her age or level of expertise, votes on which business to fund. There's a ton of evidence that collectively intelligent is more brilliant than a few experts, said Saunders. We trust the intuition of 500 women over five experts in a room any day. Show her the money. To date, the group has lent over $5 million to 63 entrepreneurs. Among the many successful ventures, an Alaker and three-wheeled walking bike for people with mobility issues. 21 Toys, which creates games that teach empathy, collaboration, and other social-emotional skills. And Little Lotus, which uses NASA fabric to create temperatures regulating swaddles for babies. Loan recipients are encouraged to ask activators to advise, dismantle the myth of the maverick genius. Our culture tells entrepreneurs that where our culture tells entrepreneurs to fake it till you make it, but that's nonsense, says Tony Desmar, a former nutritionist and inventor of Abigo, A beeswax wrap that keeps fawn fresh and plastic wrap out of landfills. When Desoir received her CEO loan, Abigail was in a rocky place. With the group's help, she was able to rebrand and grow by 300%. Now the product is sold in 40 countries. Along with her business, Desoiro, confidence grew too. The support of all those women made me feel 10 feet tall. And that was Sister Act. And we give you a little bit of what I know for sure. Something wonderful always happens when my now grown girls graduate of the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for Girls in South Africa. Gathering around my table for Thanksgiving, we share incredible meals and even more incredible conversations. There's laughter and singing and sometimes tears of gratitude for new relations. There are games, changes, black cards, revolted and deliberates about movies, debates about Me Too, forgiveness, tattoos, Kanye's church, mass incarceration. Everyone has strong opinions on every subject, and we often don't agree. It's the best of what family really means, a safe space to express and completely be yourself. So many of the girls at my school come from broken families and a lot feel abandoned, but their fathers are still longing for love, and that wasn't given. I've told them again and again, your family can only love you the way they know how. It may never be the way you want love to show up. The greatest gift we can give ourselves is to accept love in all its forms and learn to give, accept whatever love we didn't receive. Because this I know for sure, if you believe love when it comes in, healing happens, suffering and bad karma banging subsides. Sweetness unfolds and reveals a better chance at your best life. Well, we've run out of time for this episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to text with us next week for more of Oprah Magazine. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Shadate. For the Triangle, for the North Carolina Reading Service. It's a blow. From the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time on the radio.